Santa robs the love boat, Ned Flanders has no chill, and humanity has less than 50 years left to live. This week in 302010. 302010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say. It's time for a new 302010, your weekly look back at what happened in movies, music, TV, and occasionally video games, comic books, and wrestling. 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago.
This very week, baby.
This very week. This is December 23rd to the 29th, and for what it's worth, this is the last full week of 2016 we will be discussing. Oh. The next episode will dip into the new year.
And right, hell out of here, 2016.
So we have to celebrate New Year's three times.
But I'm sorry, Diana, we're at full Christmas.
Yeah, I know.
This is peak
actually,
Christmas.
I think we're a little past full Christmas because, we'll get into TV shows a little bit later, but a lot of them are just like, nope, we're done for the year, even in 86.
Yep.
I did a whole blog about Christmas specials, and someone finally chimed in, like, Christmas specials exist so people who work at TV stations can go home and not work. So, like, there's no news. We'll just air a 60-year-old special.
I mean, I worked at a TV station two Christmases.
Yeah.
And somebody's always in that building.
Someone's always in the local TV station.
But, like, the news also is always on. Mm. So, like, yeah, people work Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Christmas Day night.
Just a comment on
the
site.
That was often me.
Can't vouch.
Because I'm a Jew, so I'll take the overtime and let someone else go home.
There you go.
Diana will always take the Yuletide shift.
But, yes, I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
Chris Antista, King of Christmas.
Dave Rudden, the Force of Freedom. you'll know in a minute.
You'll know.
Diana and I get up on the good foot, and then I die.
This will make sense later, I
spoiler!
But yes, we will look at December 23rd through the 29th, and you can follow along at 302010.net, where I post our notes for the episode. You can kind of read what it is we're talking about and see some clips in there for some of the music that we'll discuss. You can also support us on patreon.com/lasertime,
where you'll be getting an exclusive Patreon wrap-up show for this whole year. What won everything, what was the best, what was the worst, what performed, what
just didn't. For our patrons.
Just for our patrons. A shorter episode, but a wrap-up of
looking back at the 52 episodes we recorded this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can.
Will it be 53?
Well, including the
April
Fools. and then we did that double episode, So the episode numbering got a little screwy, but nonetheless, we are in the final week.
There's plenty.
December 23rd to the 29th. And we start with a little bit of news before we get into movies. Just because, I don't know, well, spoiler, the next couple of shows are way lighter than the previous 3 months where we were pushing 2 hours or eclipsing that. But just to get some, it being the end of the year, and this encapsulating Christmas as well, the top 10 toys of 1986.
Oh, yeah.
Which this is like peak toy time.
So I'm going to say some Popples.
No.
Maybe some Mad Scientist kits.
No. Oh, G.I. Joe is number one.
Ah, gross.
Which used to be the foot tall G.I. Joe dolls.
Yeah.
But then, they were petroleum based toys to make the plastic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that gas crisis that we had in the 70s kind of is what part of one of the reasons it became the 5-inch toys that most of people our age
would be super hard plastic.
Yeah, that would know more. And then that combined with a cartoon that had been running now for a couple of years. And the toys, the G.I. Joe toys, are number one.
Yeah.
These are the ones that are seemingly held together with one rubber band.
One rubber band.
And when that snaps, then all the limbs
We call it an O-ring. And you can buy new
Busted
ones.
Your O-ring.
Well, I like that people know the term Kung Fu Grip. And that comes from the 12-inch G.I. Joe toy.
Yeah.
And that hasn't... I mean, our generation has no idea what that even is.
Yeah.
I don't know what it really was. Just
I
a button or thing you hit the back?
11.
Yeah. And like I... didn't get into G.I. Joe as much as a little kid, but like growing up in a house obsessed with military aircraft, I had like every airplane. Not because necessarily I wanted it, but because my dad is like, hey, here's a Sky Striker. This is yours now.
You could clearly
it's
tell.
It's an F-14, sort of.
These are things for boys. Like boy things.
Yeah. I hated G.I. Joe. I thought it was boring because it's just guys.
The Joes are boring. Cobra,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. And so every year for my birthday, you could tell my aunt shopped the clearance aisle. I get this no-name G.I. Joe. And I only had a few moments of defacing toys, putting driving nails into their pelvises, sure. And it was always G.I. Joe.
They were good for that.
Mm-hmm. I have to correct myself. It's Sublime that used the lyric Kung Fu Grip about
I didn't
want to
correct
off.
You. I knew exactly what you were talking about.
But the other toys rounded out by Pound Puppies.
Oh, wow.
I did have a Pound Puppy.
Yeah. I had a Pound Purry.
Those were
nice.
Those were cross gender. Like, you get a Pound Puppy and be a boy or a girl. Like,
it didn't come with a Cabbage Patch birth certificate. Like,
yeah, but it's just a puppy that had a dog that had puppies. So
yeah, it's just a stuffed animal dog.
And I feel like to put a stopper in. All year of 1986 that we talked about, we keep talking about how much 50s nostalgia there was in the mid-80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pound Puppies is like the number two most popular toy of the year. The Ninja Turtles VHS that will come out in 87 of the first episode, like the saga begins or whatever. The Ninja Turtles cartoon is about to begin in a year, I think. That VHS has a Pound Puppies cartoon at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
This is the FHE... if you remember this VHS intro. But yeah.
Crayon logo.
Yep. Pound Puppies at the Pound. The Pound being at the Hop. It's a sock hop.
Oh, baby.
A sock hop music video starring the Pound Puppies. If you're lonely and you need a friend, someone whose love will be true until the end. And I thought this was really cool.
Earth Puppies. Earth Puppies.
Because look at this dog. Like...
Yeah, he's wearing like a fucking like Archie varsity jacket. The main
and
character.
That dude, that zipper is down. He is ready to party.
Wow.
Dude, I thought this was like the coolest thing. This is stupid.
At the Pound.
Anyway,
they make the Pound sound like a real fun place
great,
where
man.
Dogs are not euthanized.
You are.
And that's,
if you don't adopt us, they're going to kill us at the Pound.
Is that creating a false scarcity? We will murder these toys.
Yeah. And after that is Barbie, of course, and then another one that a lot of us would know from that era.
Mm-hmm. Show and tell time.
Another teddy bear? My teddy's name is Teddy Ruxpin. He talks, he tells stories,
And nobody believes the kid.
Right. Four bachelors not included.
It seemed like an amazing...
Hi, my name is Teddy Ruxpin.
Can you and I be friends?
Can you and I be
friends?
And now...
One so bad, my parents would never buy me one. I had a Teddy Ruxpin lunchbox, sleeping bag, no Teddy Ruxpin.
Overthrow the government, Chris.
I'm surprised it took people so long. You can put any tape in there and he'll roughly try and read it. And him doing the Wu-Tang lyrics
of course.
Recently is great.
Yeah.
And they just released a new one at a prototype convention. And he has LED eyes that move in addition to his mouth. It's real creepy.
That ad was kind of creepy because he says, can you and I be friends? They show the kids and the kids are wide-eyed and mouth agape and nodding slowly like, yes, master.
Yes, robots.
We've had horror films that star... nearly static dolls that look just like him, and somehow that's exactly what the commercial show.
What's that? Freddy? Five Nights at Freddy's.
Five Nights at Freddy's. Jeez.
Basically, like large animatronic Teddy Ruxpin
trying to
kill
you.
And then rounding out the top 10, Mask.
Oh, yeah.
I love Mask. It's like again, I've always been more
Eric
into vehicles. Than people.
Yeah.
They're sort of Transformers meets G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Would you say?
It's like G.I. Joe sized people ride vehicles, but it's like this is a motorcycle, but then when you twist the exhaust pipes up and pull these things out, it's now a helicopter.
My parents were kind of against what they called violent toys, but my aunt would still get stuff through, and one of them was the Mask 57 Chevy. That's where I first encountered the 57 Chevy anything.
Yeah.
And immediately, like, you're going to shoot your sister with that. You need to be careful. Missiles right out of the headlights, straight into her eyeball. it had a bumper that shot the green spare tire out. Had a Mask sticker on my bookcase until
Ninja
I was
Turtles
like 20.
Had a 50, like a classic car. The Neutrinos flew around. That car was awesome.
Yeah. You could do no wrong. Build the biggest car you can.
Cabbage Patch Kids, Transformers. Mm. We talked about Transformers, the movie earlier this year. The best movie of the year, frankly. Thank you all for agreeing. Laser Tag. WWF toys, because this is
old rubbery ones.
Which, they're like unmovable.
Yeah, not at all. And your dog always loves to bite them.
And then rounding out the top 10 finally is Muscle Men.
And those your dogs would just swallow whole.
Yes, and I think this is before muscle men got real wacky. Mm-hmm. They were just pink wrestle dudes before they became like, this one's a pyramid with eyes. Yeah. also out in news, there's not a lot. Just thinking about my own Christmas in 1986, since this is the week of Christmas. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember because I was six, but I know I didn't have an NES yet, and I think I was probably still farting around with my sister's Atari 2600. I can't remember specific things I got. I probably got Transformers or He-Man, and I'm guessing that Sky Striker G.I. Joe plane, which is an F-14 that has retractable wings and all that crap. But again, not because I specifically wanted it, but because an airplane. That's
yeah, He-Man accessory I wanted the most, and it's so stupid. And I was really bummed about it because I had all good guy stuff, was the shark tank. Like, it's just a thing on treads with a purple shark mouth that you chomped other figures with. It did nothing, but looks so cool.
A lot of those toys were real bad. Yeah. But Bashasaurus, Spidor, nice. Nice. Does anyone else remember Christmas 86?
Thinking that year I might have gotten Casey, who was like, or around that time, because Teddy Ruxpin was big, but I never got a Teddy Ruxpin. What I did get was Casey, who was like Teddy Ruxpin, but a robot. And he had like an LED, not an LED, but like a Texas Instrument kind of like digital face that would like move in time with the books.
Okay.
Oh,
no.
Yes, I do remember this thing.
Yeah, so like I think it was either my parents realizing this thing's cheaper and my son, and our son likes robots more, so let's go with this instead of the dumb teddy bear that sold out everywhere.
Yeah, I do remember.
Introducing Casey, the tape player with personality.
He rings the bank, he talks to you.
Hi, my name is Casey.
Casey, it's amazing the things you can do.
Casey tells stories and jokes, too. Toast and joke, Casey.
What do you get when you mix two ducks with one cow?
Two Jews walk into a bar.
Chris, you talked over the joke!
Two ducks with one cow.
Now we'll never know.
Look, if you guys want this show to continue, we're going to hear the punchline of this joke.
Okay.
Quackers and milk.
Quackers and milk. Great. Moving on.
Glad we got that out.
But yeah, that's top 10 toys again.
That joke can hold up to like infinite replays, by the way, because you're only going to get one of these tapes.
Again, yeah, G.I. Joe, Pound Puppies, Barbie, Teddy Ruxpin, Mask, Cabbage Patch Kids, Transformers, Laser Tag, WF Toys, Muscle Man.
I don't know if I remember this specific Christmas holiday season, because we're 2 years past Cabbage Patch Kids, like going insane.
Phenomenon.
Yeah.
I want to say I had the Cabbage Patch Pet around this time, which was like the same thing. It's like a really hard plastic head and it was like a dog and the squishy body.
Oh, yes.
And the head was so freaking hard. It was like, you can't cuddle this thing, man. You just scrape your face.
Speaking of Cabbage Patch, because we're killing time, there's like one movie. the greatest subshoot of Cabbage Patch doll that came out around this town.
I remember this came out.
Somebody had to... Who was vetting these things?
And I remember my mom being like, that's a terrible name. They shouldn't call that. And I'm like, well, why? Yeah. I don't understand.
Shoot. It's not easy taking care of these, Michelle.
Preemies need extra special care.
Oh, I take good care of her. I always test her bottle, cover her head in the sun.
You want a preemie?
I was. Was I this small?
Can you get a girl, a kid who can speak clearly? Like, you're on a commercial advertising a product. And
She was born premature.
So was I. I can do this.
So that came out the previous year. That is the smaller version of the Cabbage Patch Kids called Cabbage Patch Preemies.
Which makes so little sense because the normal ones are Cabbage Patch Kids, so they're like toddlers. So why Cabbage Patch Babies not an option? Did you have to go to Cabbage Patch Preemies?
Mommy, am I not designated as a kid because I was born prematurely? Not according to Cabbage Patch Kids.
You are now a real child.
So weird.
But it comes with its own incubator and high oxygen environment.
It was definitely in an incubator.
I can hook it up to the dialysis machine.
Yeah, its lungs aren't formed yet.
I mean, Diana.
It will have its own feelings someday.
I didn't do it. Blame Xavier Roberts or whoever, man.
Put this Godzilla figure next to him. See what happens. also, a soft launch this week in Disneyland. Star Tours, which we will talk more about next week because there's even less to talk about. but getting into movies, it's a cool ride even to this day. But movies this week, Golden Child is still number one. Paramount with Eddie Murphy saving the world from demons or whatever. We talked about it a few weeks ago. But movies this week, The Morning After, Came out on Christmas Day with Jane Fonda, Jeff Bridges,
Most importantly, Raoul Julia, because it's kind of I love him in Street Fighter and Addams Family. Didn't really get to see him in anything else.
Oh gosh,
but he's real good here. He's the hairdresser kind of. A woman wakes up in her bed with somebody who has been killed, and she doesn't remember anything, and meets up with Jeff Bridges, a cop who believes her, and you know it turns out Raoul Julia is married to her, and she can't remember that, and her audience isn't told. It's all on YouTube. The whole movie's on YouTube, so I watched a little bit of it.
So you assume Raoul Julia is like a fun, wacky actor, so you haven't seen like Kiss of the Spider Woman?
Yes, for the first hour, he plays what looks like her best friend, and it's revealed later he's married to her, and they're separated, and he wants to get a divorce, so he frames his new girlfriend frames her for murder.
Ooh.
That's the big reveal. You'll never see
I have
it.
Not seen him in a serious role.
There's got to be an easier way.
Is it Presumed Innocent? I think he's a lawyer. And there's one where he's a lawyer. He's really good in it.
But piece of a trailer.
Last night, she drank to forget.
Nice.
Today, she'd do anything to remember what happened between the hours of midnight and dawn. The morning after.
Dude, everything.
I love it because the murdered guy is like, he has a scared, he's lying on his back, has a scared look on his face, holding his hands over his chest with a knife like magnetic north out of his body. It's hilarious. But I don't know. People love this movie.
It's Sidney Lumet, man. It's directed by Sidney Lumet, who's just an amazing director.
Lumet? Not Lumet.
Lumet. Yeah, who's an amazing director.
But apparently, Jane Fonda was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for this film.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Did not win.
But also at this week, Brighton Beach Memoirs, my favorite Donkey Kong Country novel. Jonathan Silverman, written by Neil Simon.
I've seen this a million trillion years ago as part of sort of a trilogy about like coming of age and growing up, and I believe it's
like a Biloxi Blues or something.
I think Biloxi Blues. I love that movie. Is also a part of that trilogy. It's
semi-autobiographical about Neil Simon.
Yeah, like going into the army.
The army in Mississippi.
South. This is might be the same character. I'm really sorry I'm forgetting this. I love Neil Simon, but I'm totally blanking on
Odd Couple 2 or GTFO.
Shut up. Goodbye Girl or GTFO.
The first chapter in what is to be known as the Eugene Trilogy. It precedes Biloxi Blues and Broadway Bound.
Right.
But it is, in fact, part of these things.
Biloxi Blues, Broadway Bound, Brighton Beach Memoirs.
Biloxi Blues, great Christopher Walken.
Brett Blykes.
Do you doubt my veracity? Like, I love that movie.
That's it for movies. I mean, big surprise. Hey. It's a little quieter than prior weeks. But again, this is the last episode of 2016 in full, which means 86, 96, 06 wrapping up, more or less. So lots of great movies that we discussed all year, so do go back and we'll talk about Aliens, Flight of the Navigator, Platoon,
Mars Attack. Again, like I think we're so used to movies not only releasing on Christmas Day, but like 3 days before it. Yeah. And I'm looking at it; it wasn't even really happening. Not even 96. Not a lot of movies.
We got a couple of real good ones in 96.
We do, but
2006
it's like,
is better.
The three Oscar Beatty movies and the family comedy that come out every December 25th. Isn't in full effect yet.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Yeah.
It's pretty close.
Last Boy Scout, everybody. TV this week, December 23rd.
So we've got a mixture of Christmas episodes and shows just ending their runs. But besides all that, on December 26th, 1986, Kennedy Center Honors airs.
Okay.
So this will be a common theme throughout all three decades. In 86, they honored Lucille Ball, Ray Charles, Hume Cronin, and Jessica Tandy.
Oh, that's
husband
nice
and wife
to get
duo.
Them together. Yeah.
Both stars of Batteries Not Included. Phenomenal.
Yeah. My favorite computer.
two shows ended their run the day after Christmas. The first was Sanchez of Bel Air, which was a USA Network comedy that only ran 13 episodes, but it is notable.
This is not the
as,
story.
the first basic cable show that had a contract for residuals during reruns.
Oh, wow.
And like for a while it was called
reran.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, like it's ironic that this show that nobody knows anything about, but like it's called the Sanchez Rule or the Sanchez Clause that like you get diminishing amounts for each time it's rerun, but you get money every time a show is rerun.
Yeah, just reading again about You Can't Do That on Television, and that show is lost to time for not figuring out how to pay its three dozen children
and
actors.
Then when they asked, are we getting paid, the producer said, I don't know. And then the Slimer. But here's a promo for Sanchez of Bel Air.
All families have their problems. How's it going, Mike?
It's Miguel. I hate my life.
Oh, Poppy, I hate my life.
Look at the bright side. Your son isn't gay and your daughter's not pregnant.
Sanchez of Bel Air.
Ready! Woo, well, last episode! Yeah.
Do I get a...
No. At least not yet.
Is that Ren and Santoni? There it is.
There
you go. I'm just barely like peeking over Brett's shoulder. I want to look up the cast now.
So
I think
so. The main guy was the Poppy from from Seinfeld,
who
peed
on
the
couch.
Yeah,
yeah, Remy Santoni.
Yes,
cool.
So also that very same day, December 26, 1986, Search for Tomorrow ended its run. Had a few more episodes.
Wow.
9,130 episodes. Oh. It was a soap opera that started in September 3rd, 1951 and ran, you know, 30-plus years, 34 years.
Wow.
Someone put in a promo from the
Yeah, this is a... It's a soap opera, but just to give you a sense of what we're missing now. From 1979...
Today on Search for Tomorrow.
I'm not leaving. Not that easily.
Liza, I want to be with you,
but I don't care what you say. Nothing is going to drive me away from you. And I want you.
They are...
Search for Tomorrow at 12:30, 11:30 Central and Pacific.
Friday!
she's starting to undress,
and they are basically in a black void.
Wow.
There's nothing happening.
With that music, I was just about to cut in with, like, I'm never going to leave you. Oh, I'm never going to leave.
Man, never heard of the show.
Yeah, me either, but...
Well, surely you've heard of The Love Boat, which aired the episode A Christmas Cruise, where a criminal is on the boat dressed as Santa Claus, I guess, so he can steal.
Nice.
That's more easily steal. Here's,
well,
here's
then him. Where is he going to go? He's on a boat.
Dressed as Santa, looking over the edge.
Did you lose your reindeer, Santa?
Who are you?
I'm a Christmas angel.
What?
Do your parents know you're out here by yourself?
Doing yours?
That's different. I'm an adult.
But you have people who love you.
I do. Name two.
I love you, and all my friends love you.
Looks to the sky.
That's what I think it is. A sign? A Christmas miracle. An angel sent from heaven to restore my faith in myself.
And then he shoots her.
Is this sincere? Is he going to like...
He takes off... No.
Do you really care about me?
Is this a heel turn?
I'll throw her overboard.
He takes off his beard and scares a girl away. And then he's like, oh, I can't... Like, even an angel scared of me.
Oh, here we go. Reality sets in.
I am. I'm Arthur Berkeley.
So we got guest stars for this?
I thought it looked like Tony Randall, but it's not.
No.
This is also like Love Boat is, I think, officially ended its run. It just does like random holiday episodes here and there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's nothing compared to The Running Man's The Hate Boat. What a biting parody.
Yeah.
Really let him have it.
The Hate Boat.
Also, this week, December 26, 1986, the final episode of Rambo, The Force of Freedom airs.
Oh, sweet.
65 episodes in a little under 3 months.
Yeah.
Started September, ended
Wowza.
December 26.
Kind of overestimated demand for, yeah.
Well, I guess it was like, instead of being a Saturday morning cartoon,
it was
just,
syndicated. It was
yeah,
every day.
Yeah.
Sorry. Can I throw out some of the guest stars for the Christmas Cruise?
Sure.
Include Marion Ross, the mom from Happy Days,
okay,
coming on as the new Mrs. Steubing. She guess she married the. That was John Biner, who's a character actor in a million TV shows as Santa. Leslie Caron, Tony Franciosa, Gina Lola Brigida, Peter Scolari. Woo.
Wow.
That was little Judith Barcy. I don't know who she. Yeah. And. Burt Parks uncredited.
Yeah.
So those are some, yeah. We got some has-beens from the 60s. We got some TV has-beens from the 70s. That's good. Mm. And Leslie Caron. I like her.
And this didn't air on Christmas, but we have another misbehaving Santa from the show Rambo, The Force of Freedom. I forget. There was an old episode of Laser Time where you talked about like weird Christmas episodes. Mm-hmm. And this has Santa confessing to his past.
This is the weirdest thing to make force a connection between Rambo and Santa.
Yeah.
He's always there when you need him. Chris, you're amazing. You really love making this stuff for those kids. I do, Rambo. It's work I can be proud of. Like what I used to do when we met.
Gosh, what'd you used to do, rob banks?
Oh, no, little friend. What I used to do was much, much worse than robbing banks. I used to make weapons for a country that wouldn't hesitate to use them.
Weapons? You mean like guns?
This is
this is crazy.
Captivating.
I wrote a whole thing on it on Cartoon Christmas.
I mean bombs, missiles, planes, rockets.
Jack in the boxes that had dynamite in their hands.
As he makes a fist and it's like, I made bombs.
Yes,
before I became Santa Claus, I had a necklace made of Viet Cong ears.
God, so fucking weird.
Why do that? Wow. Why do that?
And then, of course, that he sounds German.
The only people watching this are kids.
Yeah,
it's so weird.
He was a Nazi.
To be fair, it plays a little fast and loose whether he's the actual Santa, but of course he is. And it's about Savage. That's an acronym that I will not try and figure out. Who is fucking up a toy factory. I can barely remember. It's awful. It is an awful episode.
That animation was real bad.
You don't know your heroes, man. don't meet
But him. How about that Sylvester Stallone impersonator?
He's way too coherent. Speaking of mauling people and doing awful things, taking us out of the... Well, not before we get into the music. Games, not a lot happening. We've talked about the NES is out, but not a lot of specific games coming out now. And again, most, especially in 86... Video games as a a thing are just kind of starting to get back into becoming a mainstay and not like, that fad from the early 80s, late 70s, that's done. That died. It's in the process of being rebuilt, but we're kind of in between big releases for a while now. One thing I did want to mention, we talked briefly about arcade games because they're hard to track down exactly when they came out, but an awful game called Chiller that was earlier this year, somewhere in 86, noteworthy for being super gory and very mean, where it's you go to stages like a dungeon or a torture chamber, and it's basically naked people in chains, and you shoot them, and they scream. There are layers of, like, you shoot them once, and their skin falls off, and then you shoot them again, and their muscle falls off, and then they're just skeletons, then you can shoot the bones. And an NES conversion followed with a lot of that violence is intact, which is very strange given, well, it was an unlicensed game, which we'll talk a little bit more about in the next month because of Tengen. But here's just some noise from the game of people being shot with 1986 technology.
Get that bee out of here.
It's just a light gun. While an alligator slowly eats a woman's legs. It's just the most disturbing, weird game.
I feel like this was one of the first, like, browser games I ever played. Like, someone just, like, I'm at work, someone IMs me, like, check out this game, just click on everything, it blows up.
Cool.
This is what
my mom loved it.
This is what everyone thinks video games are. You're doing bad work. Music this week, taking us out of the 80s. Again, we've talked about so many hit albums and number one songs all year. You can go back and check all that out. But one album that I was... important to me in a roundabout way is What Do You Know Deutschland? KMFDM's second album would be re-released by Wax Trax later on with some added songs, and again in 2006 more refined, but this is the band still finding their sound, more or less. It doesn't have a lot of the riffy guitar goodness of following KMFDM albums. It doesn't have a lot of the cool, like, late 80s like synthesizer sounds that some of their later albums have, like Money or even Angst.
I can't even believe they go back that far.
They have been around for over 30 years, and Inesh, Sasha Konet, it's a German name so I'll butcher it, Sasha Konitsko, Raymond Watts, kind of make up this trio that show up over and over again. The song Kickin' Ass is what I mostly know, because KMFDM is a very self-referential band. While they're super serious and all about protesting and the system is rigged and, like, the whole system we've built up is a joke, and there's no justice anymore. And they've been a lot of, like, you know, Anarchy 101 or Protesting 101 stuff. But again, that everyone needs that to... you need your gateway to understand some of that stuff. And when I was 15, discovering Angst, Nihil, and we talked in the 96 segment about Extort, which was their album from 96. I already went through some of this already, but huge influence on me in the 90s. But I was just surprised to see What Do You Know Deutschland is, like, 86. It's 30 years old this week.
My album is also named Extort.
But I would suggest, I mean, I don't know how much I went into before, but KMFDM in 1999 was roped into the Columbine shooting because the shooters had written lyrics for one of their songs, Waste, which is one of my favorite songs. They wrote lyrics in the margins of their of their book. When you're like, I know something edgy, I'm gonna write this
lyrics by Columbine.
Yeah. So and then they kind of, you know, and that was on 420, which was the
day, the sex number,
Hitler's birthday,
which was Hitler's birthday, the Columbine shooting, and the day their album Adios released, which was their next album. So then they had they wrote a song called Witch Hunt after that. That's really classic great KMF theme song of just riffing guitar and yelling complaints about shit. It's great. But their sound changes a lot, and What Do You Know Deutschland is almost unrecognizable for what you would associate KMF theme with. But we can go out with, I'm going to guess it's Zeig Zeig, because there's a lot of German stuff in here. But this is one of the better songs I like off of What Do You Know Deutschland. It's on Spotify. You can check it out if you already have an account. But we'll go out with that. And we come back this same week, 1997.
Once there were two bears, a big bear.
I'll have a Coca-Cola Classic.
And an even bigger bear.
Give me a case of Coke.
This bear loves the big, bold taste of Coca-Cola Classic, the original. And this bear loves the light, smooth taste of Coke. Because it goes down real easy.
How about another? Yeah, another case. Another case? You gotta keep a lot of Coke in the refrigerator.
Coke and Coca-Cola Classic.
Dear, I fear we're facing a problem. You love me no longer, I know. And maybe there is nothing that I can do to make you do.
That is the Cardigans, Love Fool. And even though we did already talk about the movie this is from, Romeo and Juliet. Romeo plus
Juliet.
The soundtrack was a huge part of that movie. Mm-hmm. Sold a crap load, and we talked about it again a couple of months ago. I think it was November, maybe late October. I can't recall the exact date, but we already had a full discussion about this. But I put this in here because the Cardigans, this was released back in September ahead of the movie's release. I don't think I ever played it coming into a break because there was probably some other album or number one hit or something related that I played. The album this is off of is called First Band on the Moon. Sold under just under 700,000 copies sold, likely off the strength of this one song. Because it was everywhere. Yeah. 96, 97, 90, I mean, to this day.
To this day, it's on the radio.
You can hear it on the radio. It is the Cardigans, Love Fool, going in the news this week. In 1996, on Christmas Day,
in the morning,
child pageant star JonBenet Ramsey was killed in her Boulder, Colorado home.
First of all, I want to get this out of the way. It was not me. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of this, people. I'm tired of this.
I mean, were you? You were in Florida.
I saw that just this year there was like several 20th anniversary documentary series about her, and everybody's like, "This is all terrible. All of this is terrible.
It's horrible." And we're never gonna know what actually happened because the Boulder cops fucked up so fucking bad that when was it? It was not that long ago. I ended up watching one of those specials because a former FBI profiler that I've heard on some true crime podcast was on it, and it was, you know, they kind of go over some of the evidence and they leave some of the other evidence behind, whatever. But the fact of the matter is we're never going to know what happened because the cops fucked up everything so bad. They immediately, the family fucked up the crime scene. The cops let the family further fuck up the crime scene. And it's really, really sad.
How did she die?
I think she was hit on the head and then strangled.
I don't want her.
Yeah. Never. And she was, what, six?
There's a little bit of a summary here.
Christmas night in Boulder, Colorado. The year is 1996. A couple makes it home after a Christmas party and falls asleep with their two children already tucked into bed after the holiday celebrations. But in the hours following what should have been a silent night became a night that would send one family into a winter's darkness and a country glued to their TV set.
Police! I'm at 55 15th Street.
What's going on there, ma'am?
We have a kidnapping.
Explain to me what's going on, okay?
There's a note left and our daughter's gone.
The following day, 6-year-old beauty queen JonBenet Ramsey was reported missing by her parents.
And the saga unfolds from there.
Yeah, and this just, God, this was so, everything about this dominated the news for, like,
yeah, it was a long time.
Literally. Well, it came back up like 10 years later because there was a guy who confessed, and then they had to extradite him from Thailand.
And they found her
totally
in
the
basement of their home. I think that's the next step of this.
What was left in her place was a lengthy ransom note and a family terrified. But as her parents and authorities began to look for the girl, her father made a grisly discovery in his basement, the body of young JonBenet with a nylon cord wrapped around her neck.
Yeah.
And it goes from there.
What's the popular theory then?
Well, a lot of people think the dad did it because, I mean, it's part of what I think grabbed everyone's attention, besides that it introduced a lot of people to kid beauty pageants that they didn't know about.
To me, that's the biggest
that's
tragedy
the big
next
thing.
To her dying young is all we have are pictures of her in stupid sparkly cowboy hats. glamour shots photos. Poor girl.
That whole thing, which just already looks like its own kind of child abuse in a way. And the fact it's a locked room mystery. There are three people in the house, mom, dad, and brother. And could someone else have gotten in? That's the theory, but maybe not. There was a window broken downstairs, but it had been broken a while. But
what's
there's
the motivation? Why ransom this random
child?
Right.
Were
they wealthy?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And the ransom note was written on the premises, and it's like a couple pages long, so it would take you like half an hour. And there were drafts. Like they found people. Like someone had started writing and then went back, and then it like. Big part of it cribs out of Dirty Harry, where it's like, if you call the cops, the girl dies. If you do this, the girl dies. I'm like, that's fucking out of Dirty Harry, man.
Sing, damn it, sing!
So, yeah, the whole thing is, I mean, it's obviously, it's tragedy.
Yeah.
But because it got so tampered with, and because the note seems so weird, they think maybe this was a cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the leading, the documentary thing that I watched basically said without saying that they think the brother did it accidentally. And then there was
cover
a cover. Yeah, because the brother was like 9 or something. So the whole thing is just awful all around.
Oh, brother!
But so she's killed on Christmas Day
in the morning.
Yeah.
So this may come up again in the show when the actual trials start. Yeah. And I think OJ.
There's no real trial.
Not trial, but like news that. As the news like goes on,
it proliferated in the news, and then the fake news and like the tabloids. It just kept going for over a decade. Jesus.
Oh yeah.
Unrelated to that,
hard pivot.
In news again, just trying to think of can we remember our Christmases of '96. I know I just got my driver's license, and I remember getting Shadows of the Empire for N64.
This is the year the N64 came out.
Yeah,
so I got a Saturn.
There you
go. Got a Saturn. My mother didn't really get video games. My dad didn't like them, didn't want me playing them, but my mother could be suckered into the occasional purchase. You couldn't find one. She was buddy-buddy with somebody at Sears, given how much time she spent there, got them to set one aside, and then a commercial aired telling me the Sega Saturn, which just was on an even playing field as all of these systems, was coming out with three games. It didn't occur to me that this is like an acknowledgement of the system's failure.
Yeah, you can get three games when
you
bought one.
Virtua Cop, Daytona USA, and Virtua Fighter 2. Three huge games that are still popular in the arcades for free for the same price of an N64 and nothing. So I switched it over to, give me a Saturn. Like, that seems like the best bet. And they were already discounting Saturn games to $13, and I could afford them. So I had a little great time with my Stockholm Syndrome with the Saturn.
I'm going to say I probably got Tekken 2, maybe Gemmoto.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Talked about both of those this year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This would be... I was in college. I believe this is the last Christmas break that I had to go home. I was forced to go home because they locked the dorms. So I had to go. They kick you out, which is the worst because they kick you out like 4 p.m. on the Friday before break starts. But you have finals and stuff, and so it's just chaos and... It was awful.
Yeah,
I just went home and chilled with my folks. We had Chinese food for dinner, as is the way of my peoples.
And I know around this time I did the Columbia House order 5 CDs for a penny. And I know it accidentally became I ordered all women singers and didn't even realize I'd done it. And when I saw the stack, it was Alanis Morissette, No Doubt, Jewel, Garbage probably. And I was like,
the bully just showed up at your house.
No, I was just like, I didn't even think about it when I saw them all lined up. I was like, didn't even realize that's...
I didn't
that there were so
worth
many
paying for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but that's feminism right there.
Yeah.
When you don't even notice, you have equality.
Yeah.
Pouring through the 1996 game releases, I actually know for sure I got Tobal number one and Tomb Raider on Christmas Day, and I vividly remember playing Tomb Raider on Christmas morning.
There you go.
For a while.
And yeah, we've talked about all these. We actually did a VG Empire about Tobal. So
yes. Tomb Raider on the Saturn, right before Sony adopted it as a Lara Croft as a de facto mascot.
Mm.
Played on the Saturn.
Moving into movies this week again, December 23rd to the 29th of 1996. Chris, I think you have some kind of setup here.
No, you can play the trailer real quick.
All right.
And in the roles that won them Academy Awards, Shirley MacLaine and Jack Nicholson.
I'm looking for the love of my life.
Not that many more shopping days till Christmas.
Jack Nicholson, Shirley MacLaine. I wanted to ask everybody but Diana, what is this a sequel to? Because when it came out, I was baffled, and I think I saw this first. Yeah, it's a huge mistake.
I've never even heard of this movie.
Yeah. It's called The Evening Star.
So I would assume it's a sequel to The Morning Star? Or?
No, not even close. It is a sequel to 1983's Terms of Endearment, the movie that made James L. Brooks, the creator of The Simpsons, if I may draw Brett and Dave right back in. It's kind of not his debut, but like his debut as like a auteur.
His breakout.
Yeah,
I would think.
Screenwriter, director, and producer of this movie. It did huge. It won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for Jack Nicholson, Best Supporting Actress, and I think a screenwriting Oscar as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was bizarre. The main character in the movie kind of dies in the first one, and 16 years later they make a sequel. But, you know, the guy, it's based on a novel by Larry McMurtry, who also wrote Last Picture Show and Lonesome Dove.
Yep.
I think, got an Oscar for Brokeback Mountain. He has not written that many screenplays. He writes a lot of novels that screenplays get based on.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know, just very, very weird. I'm trying to think of like a comparison of like 15 years later doing a sequel to Departed or when the main cast is dead.
To like a movie that is sort of beloved and prestigious in a way, but not like stuffy prestigious. Terms of Endearment's actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really good.
Until it starts to turn sad towards the end. But
yeah, I think Judd Apatow describes it as like the thing that just inspired him to make the kind of films that he makes, because like comedy with a little bit of tragedy.
Yeah.
And the Terms of Endearment is pretty good. This movie kind of like disappeared.
Nobody cares.
I know somewhere Jack Nicholson playing a retired astronaut, which is for real, has the titular line somewhere. Ah, the Evening Star. No, not in the...
From the best-selling novel, The Evening Star.
That's not Jack Nicholson.
No, in the movie, movie itself.
I recognize that music.
I think it's from Terms of Endearment.
Oh.
And it was, I think, used later on in a lot of trailers, trying to evoke the same emotion. But watch Terms of Endearment, not this. It's just such a bizarre sequel. Like, making a sequel to Steel Magnolias or something like that, without the cast.
Or like Tron Legacy. Like.
But without the cast, or James L. Brooks is not involved in this.
Yeah, like, part of the cast, and then we've got young people, they're playing the grown-up kids that you forgot were in that other one.
Which is played by Juliette Lewis.
Right.
Yeah. So it's very... Well, Shirley MacLaine and Jack Nicholson are your only, like, through lines. William Hurt's not in this.
Jeff Daniels.
Also out this week, Travolta's back, baby.
Yeah.
And your grandma's favorite movie.
Meet an angel who will charm your soul, lift your spirits, and shake your world.
I'm a writer, too.
Oh, really? What did you write?
Psalm 85.
There's William Hurt.
William Hurt's back.
I think this was the first trailer I ever watched where I was like, that sounds a little bit too on the nose. Spirit in the Sky for a movie about an actual angel. This isn't the only time John Travolta played an angel, right?
No, you're probably thinking of Phenomenon where he plays an angelic being.
Yeah, so that Phenomenon was this year also. Mm.
Right.
Broken Arrow was earlier this year.
Jeez.
Ain't it cool?
And this is like, I mean, John Travolta's year back, like big time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, was it Reservoir Dogs the previous year?
Pulp Fiction.
95.
Yeah, and he's just wringing all the goodwill out of that he can. Like, let me do this dumb angel movie.
He's an angel that, like, smokes and drinks and is like, oh, wow, this is what an angel's like in the 90s?
It's that...
This ain't your daddy's angel.
It says not your daddy's angel.
Also in that weird era of mildly edgy entertainment for Christians about biblical creatures, like you're touched by an angel was on the air. I don't know. Like, I this movie's not for me. I've never seen it. I never will. Mm. I think John Travolta's resurgence was thoroughly unjustified and not worth it.
What a predicament.
Yeah. Mm. Because the other movies I like a lot.
So we also have this.
Unpopular speech is absolutely vital to the health of our nation. I'm not trying to convince you that you should like what Larry Flint does. Flint does. But what I do like is that I live in a country where you and I can make that decision for ourselves. I believe we can reach the morning light.
One of his best line in the movie.
If you get on that plane, I quit.
You don't want to quit me. I'm your dream client. I'm the most fun. I'm rich. And I'm always in trouble.
So Woody Harrelson playing Larry Flint in The People versus Larry Flint.
This is a great movie.
It's really fun, and I never see it get talked about anymore.
No.
Written by the Ed Wood guys, who just wrote this year People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. Directed by Milos goddamn Forman.
Milos Forman.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Amadeus.
One of two movies today produced by Oliver Stone involved in some capacity. But yeah, real good. I wanted to play Ed Norton's whole speech because that's, I don't know, I think that's one of the most important things we talk about, language and speech. It's really important to defend free speech, and especially the shit you don't like. So when it comes time to defend the stuff you do like and do want to preserve, you do. And he makes no bones about it. I don't like Hustler.
But it's fucking gross.
I respect your decision to reject it and trash it and not read it instead of banning it altogether. And I just want to remind you, Elston, this is... The song should remind you this is very clearly what the Mr. Show Taint sketch is based on. Fuck Yeah That Wide is because he was showing full Arby's.
Yep. Whole beef and cheddar.
Because Playboy had airbrushy kind of...
You're talking like I don't know what Hustler
practically
is.
Practically paint. But that Taint parody. Oh, sorry. Yes.
Twasn't?
Twernt.
Twernt.
Neither dick nor ball. It's a great sketch.
I got a 5-inch taint.
It's... that was what caused controversy. It's very strange because we just did that Naughty Christmas Songs episode and just we sort of grew up in an era where a lot of shit wasn't allowed that's totally fine now.
And none of them used the word taint. Like,
none of them used the word taint.
You could have done Taint Nicholas or Taint Tickleus. Taint Tickle This.
I couldn't find the clip or the film.
And live.
Yeah.
But I love that there's this. I love Norm Macdonald so much, and he has the only straight acting performance he has, and I thought he was really good.
I think everybody is really good in this. I mean, Woody Harrelson, I always knew he was a good actor, but I didn't realize he had kind of the range.
Yeah.
And Courtney Love is great.
Yeah, he's great. She beat out like Cameron Diaz for the role.
She kills it.
They had to give her extra insurance because she had to get clean before she did it.
Yeah, and she's fantastic. Yep. So I can't believe it.
But Larry Flint, publisher of Hustler magazine, and eventually was would you say an assassination attempt?
Yes.
Like he got shot.
He got shot. And some sniper took him out.
We know more from being in a wheelchair, and he did that for kind of standing up for free speech. Smut, if you want to call it, but he kind of won a big battle for free speech in America.
Yeah. And it's specifically for satire.
Yeah.
I have to give him credit. The guy they cast as Jerry Falwell looked exactly like Jerry Falwell. And it's a case that ended up going to the Supreme Court about whether you could run a satirical article implying that Jerry Falwell lost his virginity to his mother while drunk in an outhouse.
Yes.
And Jerry Falwell, popular preacher, obviously sued. And it goes to the Supreme Court.
Accused of Teletubby of being gay. Just a great man we'll all remember fondly.
Yeah, I mean, they sand off a lot of the edges on Larry Flint. They skip over a couple wives and stuff, but it's so damn good.
Yeah, it's fun. It's the one I'm most dying to rewatch.
It is appropriate that Woody Harrelson got a nominee. He was nominated for Best Actor at the 69th Academy Awards. The weed number, ladies and gentlemen.
and then also, Evita came out this week, which it has a crazy... Being our age... You would hear about it all the time because Madonna was like one of the biggest, personalities in the world.
Biggest people on the planet.
So I was like, this felt like it was in production for years. And it turns out it was.
It was
in production for 6 years. They wanted Madonna from the beginning, had to move on to like Meryl Streep and other people. And Oliver Stone, he shepherded it into creation. Disney eventually won the distribution rights. And I think Oliver Stone has a screenwriting credit. He also produced People versus Larry Flint.
Yep.
He had a screenwriting credit in Evita, but someone said it's just a nicety. Like, he didn't... The screenplay you're seeing on screen was not written by him.
Well,
but I've never seen Evita. I
have.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Madonna's only film success. Like, it seems like everything else is kind of...
This and League of Their Own are the only times she's good in a movie.
But this took so long to film. I remember because, like, I was getting into MTV and, like, they just kept talking about it because Madonna wasn't making... music or being a musician the whole time this Evita saga was happening. She was kind of on board with this movie. I did read it has the record beating Cleopatra Diana for most costume changes in a film.
Wow.
85 different costumes worn by Madonna, including 45 hats.
Wow.
There has to be at least one time where they cut to her, cut away, and then same scene, she's just wearing something different than the next
shot. I hope
so.
Probably. Yeah. Wow. So, no, it's really good. I mean, it's, you want to get technical, it's an operetta or rock opera by Andrew Lloyd Webber originally.
And Tim Rice.
And, yeah, Tim Rice, I want to say. And, yeah, it took them forever, but Alan Parker finally directed it. A solid director.
Oddly qualified to make this movie because he specializes in biopics. And musicals and biopics slash musicals, including Pink Floyd's The Wall, Fame, and of course Bugsy Malone, the movie I'm the saddest we will never get to talk about. The real life musical starring children about a real life terrible gangster.
Bugsy Malone. Yeah, it's about the story of Eva Perón again. A lot of angles shaved off of there with the whole, arresting journalists and disappearing people stuff. That
I don't know. All I know is she made Argentina cry because I can't read very well.
Yeah. And she's really good, but again, I mean, it's kind of like asterisk next to it because she doesn't have to do dialogue. She just sings the whole time. But, her and Jonathan Pryce and Antonio Banderas is really good in it.
Yeah, I hear there's
she
like...
She's sexy.
There's like...
Es muy caliente.
There's like 10 lines of real dialogue between them because they're just singing.
Yeah, it's just song
which
after
is why
song
I wouldn't
after
see
song. But it's really good. They shot it like all in Budapest and stuff, so it looks beautiful.
Yeah, reading about the production, Oliver Stone was primarily interested. We just talked about Salvador, so he's trying to shepherd this project about South America and film it all there and meeting with all the presidents. I think that's what was motivating him to make this, because he was an advocate for South American rights and governments and all that crap.
Yeah. It'd been a big hit on Broadway in the early 80s. It took them forever to make this movie.
Yeah, seemingly, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
This is important because also a big Madonna fan, especially 80s and 90s Madonna, and I was trying to put the timeline together in my mind. But
Madonna is in a gold... It's the golden age of Madonna right now.
Yeah, it's weird, though, because, this is her between... So in 95, she has an album, Something to Remember, which is, kind of encapsulating prior work, as well as the song Something to Remember.
I'll Remember.
That's from With Honor.
With Honor soundtrack. Why do I know that?
But she... Kind of like she had just massive, massive hits in the 80s, and then her 90s stuff like Erotica and Bedtime Stories, none of them, they got a lot of attention.
I thought they were huge.
And they sold well, but it's like there was just kind of a, I don't want to say a stink on her, but there was
she was trying too hard.
It came off very try hard, and her infamous Letterman appearance where Letterman is just kind of like, what are you doing? You're trying so hard to be edgy, and it just came off as pretty fake. And between... taking vocal lessons to be in this movie, a serious role. She had her daughter, Lourdes. Between those two things, her next album will be Ray of Light in 98.
So great.
Which is such a far pivot, which is way more introspective, thoughtful, paced better, and not trying so hard to get attention and just be more expressive about real feelings. Not real feelings, but I don't know. I love that album. I think Ray of Light is one of her best, if not her best album, frankly.
Yep.
Every single song in there is good. It's not what you think it is, but that's how this movie is kind of a catalyst that leads her to stop and pause and be like, yeah, I made the sex book, and that's fine. And all my videos are the pointy bras and everything. That's all fine, but maybe I've done that enough, and I need to, pause for a second and look at my life and see if I'm done with that, or do I want to... Is there something else that means something to me? And I think the daughter and her daughter in this movie led her to that direction.
Yep.
Anyway... TV this week.
TV!
So once again, picking up with Kennedy Center Honors, December 26, 1996, aired. This year's honorees were Lauren Bacall, Bob Dylan, Charlton Heston, Jesse Norman, and Edward Villella. Villella? I don't know. Edward Villella? I have no idea. He was honored. On December 28, 1996, E! True Hollywood Story debuted with an episode covering the murder of Rebecca Schaefer, who was a sitcom actress, I think, from the 80s, who was murdered.
She's on a show called My Sister Sam with Pam Dauber, who had been on Mork and Mindy. She was murdered by her stalker, and it ended up changing some of the laws about public records in California because he got her home address from the DMV, I think. He just came up and shot her.
Started stalker laws, basically. Yeah. Hey, don't stalk.
I just discovered
they haven't won.
E True Hollywood, they're still they hold up as pretty well produced, even though if the person is still alive, it's kind of a half story of their life. But they're like, E did not protect these at all. They're all on YouTube, and I get sucked into these loops of mysteries and scandals and E True Hollywood stories. They're
I've watched all on YouTube. The only one that I remember watching is Weird Al's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or was that Behind the Music?
Yeah,
Behind
so that, music, that's premiering that's later this year, and I think it takes some cues from this. Where it's like,
okay, that's what I'm thinking of then.
Two Nickelodeon shows ended their runs this week. One more notable than the other. The first is less notable. If you can click, Brett, on the intro. The one that I thought was canceled after one season, but actually went from, I think, 93 or 94 to 1996.
Wow. Sister loved this show.
Yeah. One of the original SNCC shows.
Yep. The second one in the block.
Yeah.
This is Roundhouse. Yeah.
I was about to tell you.
Yeah.
11 times.
Yes.
Whenever life gets you so down, you know you can go down to where the music and fun never ends. Wherever the music keeps playing, you know what I'm saying? Down at the Roundhouse.
I remember hating this, but when I think about it as a production...
When SNCC came out, I think this was the show that I was most looking forward to. Because
Are you afraid of the dark?
What is this
No,
about?
Are You Afraid of the Dark is crap.
So Roundhouse was like a sketch comedy.
That's why, because I loved Saturday Night Live at the time, and I'm like... There should be one in Nickelodeon. Here it is, because this was before all that came
out. But it wasn't quite a sketch, because it was all on one stage. There are no sets. So people did come out as characters, and then the musical numbers would like weave everything together.
But it was enough it was a live-ish, it felt like live comedy.
Yeah. Totally.
But with dance numbers and all that. And then I realized, this more like...
The dad character in the motorized recliner would come out and complain about MTV, which I thought was hilarious. They spelled MT. With a V. MTV.
But yeah, like... I think I quickly realized this is show is like those Saturday Night Live skits they do nowadays where it's like youth drama where they're just like moving around on boxes. It's a reoccurring skit on SNL where they're like trying to make like these big statements and they're all stupid like high school kids doing serious plays.
It has a very high school play quality, the whole show.
Like with a hint of Stomp, I want to say.
And when, and when SNCC debuted, like again, like I never liked Saved by the Bell. I never liked any, like as a kid, it's just like I don't want to watch kids my age. I see those every day. I want to see things I can't see in real life. And every time, like Ren and Stimpy, great. Ren and Stimpy's back and it's going to be on SNCC. Cool.
I want to see Ren and Stimpy raise a fart from birth.
All right, I will say, like, Ren and Stimpy was higher on the list. Oh, but man. Roundhouse was just like, this is also cool that this is here. And then a year or two later, there would be all that, and it just ate Roundhouse's lunch. Like, who cares about this one where they're singing and dancing? Yeah. That one has Kenan Thompson and Kel on it.
It was,
and,
in hindsight, Roundhouse was a really Denver. Impressive live production
and
pretty ambitious. And all that was not, but probably a better sketch comedy show for being an actual sketch comedy show.
But the more notable show ending, after only three seasons, but they spanned, I think, like 5 years, but 35 episodes, 5 specials, 16 shorts. Play the intro for that,
You're gonna love it, Chris.
I know what it is, just from the... Hold on, I know the secret lyric. You're smiling strange. You're looking happily deranged. Listen, could you settle to shoot me? Or have you bit the dog yet? They released a single. This is Polaris, who did all the music in Pete and Pete. Their album is great if you can get the Pete and Pete album. They released a cassette in cereal boxes and had the lyrics, and they bleeped out. They wouldn't transcribe that lyric, and it became the mystery lyric. Because he's saying, could you settle to shoot me, at the beginning of a Nickelodeon show. This show is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Holds up real well.
I mean, the third season was not quite as good because Artie was gone. But it was it's not that it didn't have that long a run, but like just about every episode is fun. And the last episode is very much like a last episode. It's called Saturday, and it's just various people in, was it Wellsville? Just like going around on their Saturday. Like the bus driver getting stopped at a stoplight that won't change.
I love
just
the one where
dumb, quirky stuff.
Pete tries to experience New Year's Eve several times by biking through time zones.
Yeah.
But just a super surreal live action show shot on location in New Jersey, which is not something we were used to, especially with a kids show, like something shot outdoors.
Yeah.
Amazing guest stars from crazy great musicians. Iggy Pop is like a full-time, the daughter of Nolan, yeah. Nola Mecklenburger, who's Michelle Trachtenberg. Yep. We'll talk about in a second. And who else? Michael Stipe was the ice cream man. Yeah. And a bunch of great guest stars. I really love the show.
Steve Buscemi, I think, is known as father.
Bebe Neuwirth is in there a lot. This show is so, so good.
I have to admit, this is one I have not seen. Old, I was a little old for this. So I thought, it's probably a dumb kid show for kids. Mm-hmm. But Michael has the DVD set of all of it.
It's
so
real good.
They only put out the first two seasons, and the second season's DVD is one of the worst transfers I've ever seen.
Aww.
There's literal VHS tracking on the DVD,
which
is bad. Because
it's gorgeous. It's just I'd never seen a show like Pete and Pete before, and it's just a live-action cartoon. It's amazing.
Like, they never put out the third season, and I kind of thought, well, if they're going to put the same amount of effort into the third season, I'll just get it off the internet. That's fine.
It's a shame because it should. Yeah. The show, like, I'm sure that was maybe shot on film and could look a lot better.
Yeah,
and because it's beautiful, most of it, and just the soundtrack, way ahead of its time. Magnetic Fields are in there a bunch, like a bunch of bands that hadn't broke yet, wouldn't break for years because they just had access to this one record label, and so it's a really cool show. It holds up very. The comedy holds up very well. The music's like, how did they get this? In
there's like one episode where Luscious Jackson plays at the school dance. Yeah. Another comedy milestone this week, December 29th, 1996. I'm going to botch the name of this episode. The Simpsons episode. Oh, wait, sorry. That's the next one. This one I do know the name of. Hurricane Nettie airs, where Ned Flanders snaps after the citizens of Springfield do a poor job of fixing his house after a hurricane. His house is the only one that is affected by the hurricane.
There's no master bedroom.
Yes, this is an episode where literally multiple lines come to mind. That was a load-bearing poster. Welcome to your master bedroom.
This room has electricity, but too much electricity.
Too much electricity.
I hate it. And my parents. Damn, beatniks.
Spin the middle top part-wise. Spin the middle part top-wise. Yeah. Like, over and over and over again.
He doesn't believe in insurance. He considers it a form of gambling.
Do we have a clip of it?
Yeah, I have a clip that everyone remembers, which is Ned Flanders snapping.
Oh, love it.
Calm down, diddly-diddly-diddly-diddly-diddly. They did their best, shoddly-iddly-iddly-diddly. Gotta be nice, hostility, diddly, biddly, diddly. Ah, hell, diddly, ding, dong, crap! Can't you morons do anything right?
Diddly, ding, dong, crap.
I am shocked at the falls.
Ned, we meant well, and everyone here tried their best.
Well, my family and I can't live in good intentions, Marge. Oh, your family is out of control, but we can't blame you because you have good intentions.
Hey, back off, man.
Oh, okay, dude. I wouldn't want you to have a cow, man. Here's a catchphrase you better learn for your adult years. Hey, buddy, got a quarter?
See, this is, I didn't put a dent on this because they're all so good.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
I am shocked and appalled.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like...
Mr. Flanders, with all due respect, Bart didn't do anything.
Do I hear the sound of butting in? It's got to be little Lisa Simpson, Springfield's answer to a question no one asked!
And I think Moe's is the best, like, you are an ugly, hate-filled man.
What do we have here? The long, flabby arm of the law? The last case you got to the bottom of was that case of Malamars.
Malamars, that's going in the act.
Oh, yeah, the clown. The only one of you buffoons who doesn't make me laugh. And as for you, I don't know you, but I'm sure you're a jerk. Hey, I've only been here a few minutes. What's going on?
You ugly, hate-filled man.
Hey, I may be ugly and hate-filled, but I've, what was the third thing you said?
So it's so good, and we do a whole show about The Simpsons chronologically. Yeah. We just did Duffless, and it's one of those... It changes. It tries to change everything, and like with Homer's sobriety, and has a too sweet an ending. I like it when The Simpsons take a drastic character-changing approach, but do reset at the end. And this is very satisfying.
There is a hint of, like, this is a part of Flanders now.
Yeah.
Like, that he can snap and has snapped, and I think he...
Run
like,
you over with my car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and at the end, he's like, just don't make me mad.
Yeah.
This didn't establish he had beatnik
Ned,
parents,
so crazy.
I love his beatnik parents.
His beatnik parents.
We tried nothing.
Great.
We're all out of ideas.
Yeah, like, that's another thing they established in
real
this episode.
Real square, man.
I think. Yeah. Oh, no?
No, I think it's hinted at before that.
But yeah, but like...
It makes it consistent.
I'm Dick Tracy. Take that, prune face. Yeah, I'm prune Tracy. Take that.
This is why we have Talking Simpsons, by the way. This episode is great.
But there's there's that football episode a season or two later... Where Ned is, like, angry at Homer because Homer's trying to usurp him as the coach. You're all cut. But classic episode.
Hurricane.
Yeah, we do have an entire show for The Simpsons.
That was one of those things where, like, the next day at school, like, did you see Simpsons?
Yeah.
Ned got angry at everybody. Yep. That never happened before.
Such a good season.
Even though, I was going to say, saying, you know, getting really mad and saying ding dong crap. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is kind of. Diddly ding dong crap. I said that. It's fun when you get like so mad at something that you don't even realize the words that come out of your mouth. Yeah. Like I was trying to pry a nail out of something, and there got to be a point where I think I said diddly ding dong crap. I called it every swear word. Eventually, I called it a honky, and I realized, okay, put the hammer down.
It's as racist as Diana gets.
No calling inanimate objects crack-ass.
That is our word. I have no passion for this argument.
I can't stop yelling damn crappy nails, even when no nails are involved. Taking us out of TV, getting into games this week. Again, not a lot because it's the end of the year. But one game that is listed, at least, as coming out in this late December time period on the PS1.
Cool Borders!
If you can go back, maybe early in that clip, do they have the developer where they actually say the developer's name?
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Web Systems.
Yep.
UEP by
Web. I remember playing this.
But also the announcer voice.
All right!
This is a snowboarding game that I mostly remember from a demo disc from a PS1, and I remember playing the demo, and again, I only knew that he yelled Cool Borders because of that demo disc.
I don't know if I demo if I
cool,
but this is. I mean, granted, 1080 snowboarding is like what, a year or so away, or maybe even two.
2 years,
but I think at least at this point there was like there were images of it. Like it may have been the box for the Nintendo 64, but it was one of those things where it's like this is okay. But I know something bigger is coming and better for the Nintendo 64.
Borders!
I think it's weird in that around this time, it was kind of mandatory that every system have a snowboarding game. It was kind of like one of those boxes you needed to check to be a... Xbox launched with a snowboarding franchise that nobody asked for. And then SSX made it big. Like, snowboarding games used to be all the rage.
We just got one.
Steep.
But no, this is a sign of the 90s. Like, the PS1 launched with that ESPN Extreme Sports game where, like, rollerblading.
Sports are super extreme and in your face.
By the end of the year, Final Fantasy would have snowboarding.
Snowboarding in Final Fantasy VII. But yeah. Snowboarding. Well, in Twilight Princess, it is. Snowboarding, rollerblading, like a lot of stuff that would...
Yeah, dude.
10 years before in 86, these were not things you saw in video games. You'd get skiing, basic representations of the most popular sports around. But at this point...
A collection of mini games, but a ton of snowboarding games, man. Yeah. A ton.
And we missed, on December 12th, Dark Savior came to the Saturn, which is an isometric adventure game. I think shares some, you know, development members with the Genesis game called Landstalker, which was an isometric, you know, third quarter view.
Gonna sneak up on this land.
Yeah.
Don't wake the land.
an action RPG, but this was a weirder game where, like, you would have to, like, it's really... Even at the time, I was like, this is kind of ugly, because the Saturn was meant to be a 2D machine, as we've said, and then they kind of had to shoehorn some 3D technology in there when they realized that was the direction Sony and Nintendo were going, and like, well, crap, we were building, like, the ultimate arcade 2D
the best side-scroller you've ever seen.
And, like, we'd be able to play Daytona and Virtua Fighter, but we didn't really go wild with this stuff. So you get these pre-rendered, you know, sprites... Not pre-rendered, just sprite characters, flat 2D sprites, but they're on these, crude 3D backgrounds, and you have to, like, navigate around this semi-pseudo 3D environment with a sprite, so it was kind of clumsy that way, but it wasn't a terrible game, and the music was pretty cool, and, like, I watched a friend play it for a while, and I mostly was jealous of it because it was, you know, there was no equivalent for this kind of game. Like, Sony of America, SCEA, was very much anti anything that looked old or sprite-y.
Yeah.
We just push it away. Yeah. So, and the N64, same thing. There were, like, no representation. It was Mario 3D and Mario 64. But, like, Saturn was still like, here's 2D games. Remember, you like sprites, right? And I'm like, I do. Yeah. So I never played this, but it was a big game for the Saturn.
I do remember the title screen being pretty cool. They just say, Dark Savior.
He had to.
I already closed the tab. but we'll head out of 1996 with the Evita theme song, You Must Love Me, from Madonna.
Won her Oscar, I believe?
Did it?
No.
No, nominated then.
No, they had no weird thing where it's like they didn't qualify. The song, original song, didn't qualify for the Oscars, but it did for the Golden Globes. So I remember that it won there.
Okay.
But they got really dumb rules about that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll come back with This Week in 2006.
Frightened, you'll slip away. You must love me. You must love me.
Mr. Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And, you know, it's not so great, but okay, whatever. Let's wrap up 1941 and 1966 for December 23rd through 29th. And 50 years ago this week, in December 1966, we had two big debuts. First of all, it was the first broadcast of the Yule Log in New York, where they just had a channel. Because they didn't want to, everyone left, you know, for the holidays except for, you know, like, the Jewish guy. And they just had a lovely crackling fire. You could just watch, and it's fun, and you still have those. I recommend them because they're nice. It was also the first Kwanzaa, because we're in the midst of the Civil Rights era, and they're like, let's have, like, a togetherness sort of black thing, pride, remembering the past, looking for the future, cooperative, whatever. That's pretty cool. I should celebrate Kwanzaa. I just, you know... extra candles, I'll put them next to the menorah, I'll just burn the house down, it'll be great. And 75 years ago this week, in 1941, we got a really weird movie, Hell's a Poppin', with the Hell's a Poppin' boys, Olean Johnson. I've never found them funny, but they are weird, drunk vaudevillians who would just do random shit, and it's just crazy. And as we get to the end of the year, I should say, I don't know the exact date, but happy 75th birthday to Wonder Woman. She debuted in All-Star Comics number 8, December 1941. I'd like to recommend something for her, but she doesn't have a movie yet, but it's coming, and it looks cool, and I'm glad about that. Also, I think they're talking about making a movie about her creator, which, read up on him, because that whole story is crazy. Where, you know, he helped develop the lie detector, and he lived in a open relationship threesome, and blah. I love it. Anyway, actually, you know what? I'm going to look up clips from the Linda Carter show from the 70s, because I love that. I was a big fan when I was a kid, and I had underoos, and I felt cool. Other movies coming out this week, Dangerously Live with John Garfield. Afraid I don't know that one. Remember the Day with Claudette Colbert? No. But we also have The Shanghai Gesture with Gene Tierney, but that's directed by Joseph von Sternberg, who's an amazing director. So I'm going to recommend, for my actual recommendation, another movie by Joseph von Sternberg with the word Shanghai in it, as Shanghai Express from 1932. It stars Marlene Dietrich at her most amazing and one of the first Asian stars in Hollywood, Anna Mae Wong. They are both so good, and it's this sort of drama thriller as they're going through China, and there's, like, civil war going on in the 30s, and everyone is immaculately lit, and everyone's cheekbones look amazing, and it's really, really good. And that's it for this week. Happy Christmas, and stay classic.
That is Switchfoot with Oh Gravity, and which I can't not say in here and think, oh, hey, jealousy. Oh Gravity. That is released the day after Christmas in 2006. That includes the song Oh Gravity, and I think another single that popped off of this was Dirty Second Hands. I don't know much about Switchfoot, but...
I think I heard their name as I was exiting the door of liking modern music.
I think I heard it while I was at American Eagle buying some new shoes.
The official LFO shoe. Oh, that's Abercrombie.
And also Mos Def album True Magic, his third album, got kind of middle-of-the-road reviews, and I didn't really find much you know, praise for it or anything truly noteworthy, but Mos Def True Magic out along with Switchfoot's Oh Gravity, the day after Christmas, which is I guess a reasonably good time to release an album because people get gift cards and whatever, I suppose. Speaking of news, or things, well, music, I guess. James Brown died today.
Yep, died on Christmas.
12/25/06 died on Christmas, and the next day on the 26th, Gerald Ford.
Both classic Simpsons guest stars.
Yes, yep. Both great. And died. Gerald Ford was 93.
Stage wasn't double bolted. Let's get beer and nachos.
You like beer and nachos? Nachos?
Do you like football?
Yes, Mr. President.
So I go back and forth thinking Gerald Ford sucks and feeling really bad for him. Just because he's... We've only had two presidents that were not elected. Mm. Period.
Huh.
George Washington, duh, and Gerald Ford, because Gerald Ford was Speaker of the House, so he was elected. No, but he was part of a ticket that was elected.
Oh, I see.
But wow. Gerald Ford was elected by some people in Michigan and became Speaker of the House. And then when Nixon's VP, Spiro Agnew, had to resign, he moved up to VP. And then Nixon resigned, and he moved up to president.
Well, here's hoping for a third. Third move.
How far down do we go to that chain?
Also, Betty Ford was a badass.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird. She might be remembered longer than he is.
For just the recovery stuff. Yeah. She
and,
was a badass.
Related, this week, 2006, The Audacity of Hope by Senator Barack Obama tops the nonfiction bestseller list.
It's great. If you want to hear clips of President Barack Obama saying the N-word and cursing, it's all in that book. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
I can't say any of it, but I know the lines very specifically.
Yeah, I do.
You went my bitch blank.
Yep.
Buy your own damn fries.
But this is so his big sort of like coming out party was it 2000? It must have been 2004.
Yeah.
Democratic because he was running for Senate.
Yep.
And he gave the speech and everyone, holy shit, this guy's good.
Who's this fella? I'd buy his book
again. This is when I was working at a TV station in Illinois, and man, he was running against, I'm forgetting his name, Keyes.
Alan Keyes. Was he?
That's impossible.
Alan Keyes is an idiot.
Yeah, it was Alan Keyes. Because, again, we had to cover the race because it was Illinois news, obviously. And, like, dude, everything that Alan Keyes said, it was like, what? and it was just like, there were just people in the room, like, again, super red part of the state. Like, only Chicago goes super blue, and, like, that's not where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And even everyone in the room is just like, what is he talking about? Like, he's not from here. You moved him in to run against Barack Obama. This is super transparent, and everyone could see through it. It's like
this is just like, you got a black guy? We got a black guy.
Oh, yeah, it was super obvious. Like, you just tried to counter this, and you haven't run against him. And it was like, and he's like, I'll promise you a fight. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you will lose big time, man. But whatever. Obama elected in 2004 to Senate. But yeah, his book, Audacity.
It's weird that the inexperience and his lack of experience and demeanor disqualified him from office. Okay. I don't know. That's strange. Weirder times back then.
Someone that just talked about random shit and made no sense? Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. Inside of the worst in people with base and simplistic answers. Anyway,
the top toys of 2006, the PS3 and Wii are obviously listed because those were the two big consoles, and one of them was $600, one of them was $250.
Well, that's, I think, why the Wii ended up taking it, man.
Oh, yeah.
You could buy two and a half for the price of a PS3. One came with a game.
The TMX Tickle Me Elmo, the X is Roman numeral 10, because 96 was the year Tickle Me Elmo was such a big hit, along with the N64. But Tickle Me Elmo, a 10-year anniversary edition, TMX or TM Extreme, as well as a lot of High School Musical stuff, and My For Real Friends, which I remember.
I believe we talked about it one time. It's High School. It might have been the biggest selling album of this year.
I think it's one
High School
of
Musical
the top,
soundtrack.
Oh, probably.
Definitely
in
the top three. Yeah.
This is also, just speaking of our Christmases, we kind of touched on them. Christmas 06 is the first one. I flew home in 2005, but I'd only lived in California for like literally 4 weeks. Same. Because I moved in November, and it was like, well, I'm back, but I barely have been gone. And 2006 was my first like kind of modern I fly home for Christmas Christmas, where like I don't live here, I have to stay in someone's room, I don't have anything on me, I flew here, that's it, and now I get to visit. I haven't seen you guys for like 6-7 months, and I'll be back sometime in the future. But that's kind of the start. And because I flew, like, I can't get anything for Christmas. Like, I need gift cards and candy, and that's really all I can ask for. Maybe some money, but like, I can't take gifts home.
You don't come with like a larger suitcase than you need, space.
I love traveling light, as possible.
Me too. But, or you just ship this stuff home, just mail it to yourself.
I could. But yeah, that's my Christmas 06. If you want to ask.
I mean, I was in a similar situation where I moved out, started a game pro like the week that the Wii and the PS, like that time frame.
They were a week apart.
Yeah. So like a month later, I was back home. It was actually part of me getting hired at GamePro. They were like, "Oh, we'll also pay for your flight home for Christmas." I'm like,
whoa,
"Really?"
What?
And wow. But then about 2 weeks later, like, "Oh, can you fly out like like December 18th and fly back on like the 29th?
We got you a truck with some livestock in it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I thought I was gonna get like a primo flight, and they're just like, "Nah, let's get you the cheapest flight possible for this." So I remember spending a lot of time in New York for Christmas this year, and then every year it's been like shorter and shorter.
Yeah,
I remember this my first year in SF, and I was flying back for like every holiday because I was just missing hometown so much. And I made the biggest mistake, weirdest incident in my life with flights. We were drinking in a bar until like right up till last call. Then we got in a car to go to Jacksonville from Tallahassee to get on the airplane. I left my card at the Tallahassee bar and got on the plane. And when I get back, they lost my luggage. So and I was living on somebody's couch. So I get back, I have no clothes. I only have one credit card of any kind. I have no access to my money. Just walking around San Francisco, hungry and in the same clothes for like 2 days. It was pretty neat.
Oh my god! I think this was a Christmas off for me. I do every other Christmas, where it's Christmas and spend time with the in-laws and do Christmas, and then every other year I either visit my family or I do Diana's silent Jewish Christmas, where I just have a stack of movies. Actually, I'm pretty sure because I know we had Netflix at this time, and it was like very careful about, okay, what do I want the three to be here?
Yeah.
And other things, and be ready. I got my stack, and I'm going through that sucker. And it's so quiet because no one lives here.
Yeah.
No one's from San Francisco, so everybody leaves. So it's so nice and quiet. I'm not missing anything. Everybody's off doing their stuff, and it's easy to find parking spaces. Yep. And I just watch a bunch of movies at home, and then I go out and watch a bunch of movies in theaters.
I'm tempted to try it. Just all video games
really
and no lines.
You should. It is wonderful.
Yeah.
speaking of movies, Black Christmas.
Oh,
an odd release date for this.
Yeah.
A group of college friends.
That sucks. Everyone should be home for Christmas.
Are about to discover.
Lauren, we're opening up presents.
Why don't you open the present we got you?
Their house.
I got it.
Is his home.
All is calm. All is bright.
Can you guess Black Christmas?
Eyes are rolling pretty hard.
Yeah, a remake of a 1973 movie. The woman you were talking was Nona Mecklenburger.
Oh, really?
Little Pete's friend. Yeah, 10 years growed up and in the movie Black Christmas.
Black Christmas.
I saw the original a million years ago. I don't remember it very well. Remember, it's Bob Clark.
Yeah.
Who also made Porky's in a Christmas Story.
Yes.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, very weird. And the weird thing was this released on Christmas Day, and even though it was a remake, Christians were upset. And I can understand that, like, a Christmas release should usually follow certain guidelines of what type of movie you are, unless you're Quentin Tarantino. But yeah, they didn't.
It's a horror movie.
I found it weird protesting a remake of an existing movie, but it was just they were so mad at the idea that it released on Christmas. Yeah. A sacrilege.
I feel like if it's a horror movie and it involves Christmas, you should go right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
The logic we know
or
now.
Halloween.
Yeah, like the week after Thanksgiving is when you would release, and then people could enjoy it the whole holiday season, not the day of Christmas.
That's weird.
I think it made its money back, but I have never heard anybody speak of it with any reverence. There's tons of better movies in here.
Yeah.
Also out this week.
Notes on a Scandal. Never heard of it, Diana.
Judy Dench and Kate Blanchett.
Wow. Sold.
And they acted each other, and there was Scandal, and now they're acting at each other. I haven't seen it either.
Damn.
But I like both of them. I probably watch it.
I thought you watch anything with old ladies.
I do.
And from the creative mind of Luc Besson.
Welcome to the land of the invisibles.
That's incredible.
Now, to save both their worlds.
In 2 days, some men are going to come and destroy my house, my garden, and your world. The only way to stop these men is to pay them off with the treasure.
Arthur
and the Invisibles.
Never seen Arthur and the Invisibles. Renamed Arthur and the Mini. I just wanted. I'm a big animation fan, and I feel like even CGI animation that I'm not a huge fan of hit a stride of being fun to look at and fun films. And there's this whole period in between, like, the reign of Pixar and I think 2010, there's just really weird CGI animated movies that have fallen off the radar.
It's like Monster House and
Monster House, written by Dan Harmon.
There's just like a lot of these one-off things.
What was the one? Despero, or the Tales of Despero. Yeah, the Ant Bully. Like, yeah, all of these weird-ass movies that, like, completely disappeared. And usually animated movies have a much longer shelf life, but this is one of them. And like, Luc Besson. I love Luc Besson. Visually, him doing an animated movie, I wanted to be real excited about. But, like, one of the biggest criticisms, like, this is fucking ugly.
Yeah,
well, this looks bad.
That poster is disgusting.
And the voice talent is amazing. It's got, like, I forget, Robert Downey Jr.
Oh my,
in the
yeah,
game.
This guy.
No, Robert De Niro.
Madonna, Jimmy Fallon, yeah, Mia Farrow, David Bowie, Ron Crawford, Robert De Niro, Jason Bateman,
Snoop Dogg,
and Anthony Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It's when I picture like, oh, a fifth people who make Fifth Element then get to like have not bound by reality anymore. Yeah. How beautiful is this going to be?
And not,
like,
very.
Not very. Not That's very. So weird.
And without, very by and the numbers.
Yeah, and then it seems to be, you know, like a fantasy Pixies chosen one sort of.
And it's also half live action. It's also
you can do better.
It's also partially live action. Mm. A kid gets shot into the ground and then things get animated.
There was a trilogy.
Yeah,
that's Jesus. Insane.
Out this week, Pan's Labyrinth in limited release. Mm. We'll talk more about that when it's released wider in January.
I've been dying to rewatch that.
But a bigger movie that came out this week that I actually did see.
What?
I think because it came out on Christmas Day of 2006, mm-hmm. and this will set up the premise for us.
I can't really remember when I last had any hope. And I certainly can't remember when anyone else did either. Because really, since women stopped being able to have babies, what's left to hope for?
It's a little on the nose.
The world was stunned today by the death of Diego Ricardo, the youngest person on the planet. The youngest person on Earth was 18 years, 4 months, 20 days, 16 hours, and 8 minutes old.
The ultimate mystery. Why are women infertile?
Why women?
Some say it's genetic experiments, pollution. Why do you think we can't make babies anymore?
Doesn't matter. It's all over in 50 years.
And that's the doomsday scenario of Children of Men.
Yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón.
This movie is so good.
Hot off of Harry Potter.
That whole trailer was one continuous take, by the way.
Yeah. If you, it's most famous for this middle sequence that takes place inside a car, a camera spinning around, like, I don't know, the console dash.
Yeah, and also, great. I mean, you know, there's also another one that's faked out a little bit, but it's a really long take, or a couple of really long takes stitched together.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's about, like, women can't have babies.
Yeah, 2027, they're the youngest person. What is that? The last kid
born. The last
born
baby born
died.
Basically died. And it just, like, shocks everyone in a world that's already starting to collapse. Because once it looks like there are going to be no more people, why does anything even matter anymore?
Why? That's just a great concept right there. The idea of, like, why
this
would
thing
we
that is
even
literally
try?
The problem of everything has always been people. And when they stop happening, I mean, you think things would get better, but they do not.
Well, the Earth will get better eventually, but as we start dwindling away, why should we follow traffic rules? Why should we be nice to our fellow man? Why should we do... Who fucking cares? What's the worst that can happen? I die? That's going to happen anyway.
To me, this is like the perfect movie. It's kind of a high concept, not over-the-top sci-fi.
Yeah.
Just a tense movie, because I believe we find someone who actually is pregnant.
And then it becomes like, oh my God, is this real? Yeah. Is this baby going
to
actually happen?
Big VIP mission to... To get safety.
Pretty cool.
Those are my favorite kind of sci-fi movies where it's like, let's just take the concept and then we'll just run with this.
Yeah.
You know, just a basic idea and then go from there. Yeah. Extrapolate.
Because it's Cuarón, it's every moment of it is beautiful and it's so great to watch. I own it on HD DVD.
Nice.
Ooh, I'm dying to replace it.
I think it was one of those movies that was it Universal?
Yeah, Universal.
So it was exclusive for a while until Universal gave
this
up.
This does fulfill my checkbox of sci-fi only gets critical acclaim if there are no aliens in it.
Yeah.
But the moment an alien shows up, oh, boo hiss. This can't be a real film.
I don't want to look at anybody who doesn't look like me. I'm the Oscars.
It's just like, Moon, what a fantastic... It's like a B-minus fucking sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
But because there are no aliens, breathtaking.
But it talks about the human experience. Yeah. But then so does this.
First time it's ever happened.
Mm-hmm. I want more Clive Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good.
I don't know what happened to him. Like, he was starring in almost everything.
There's The Nick, which I admit I haven't watched.
The Cinemax show?
Yeah. It's supposed to be really good.
I did watch the first episode. It was fine.
But, yeah. I like men, damn it. And he's a man, damn it.
Man. That's kind of it for movies, though. But we can bounce into television this week. The Kennedy Senator Auditors yet again.
Yes, yet again. Okay. This time, and I'm realizing now that all three decades, you could literally just switch them around and no one would notice the difference. Because this time, it's,
they always give you someone really old, though.
Zubin Mehta, right. Dolly Parton, Smokey Robinson, Steven Spielberg, and Andrew Lloyd Webber. That could be the same. That could be 1986, and we wouldn't bat an eye.
Yeah.
So
that's a good
point. I mean, look, it's honors, so it, you know, they're,
yeah,
they're forever.
I vaguely remember hearing that Jessica Simpson came out to sing 9 to 5, fucked up the lyrics, and ran away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Kind of forecasting her sister, or did it? No, I think her sister already did that.
Yeah.
Ashley Simpson.
It's the first time that one of the Simpsons girls has had egg on their face.
And on December 29th, 2006, the final episode of The Big Comfy Couch, which was a Canadian's kids show that I only remember because the star of it also played Claire Redfield in Resident Evil 2.
Yes,
but here's the theme.
Allison Court is the voice actress.
Waking up in Canada. Are you ready? Are to get you talked ready down to and sold toys.
Comfy couch. Okay.
I've never heard that.
And here comes the Mario Paint Fire Flower sound. All right, but yeah. Allison Court, one of those voice actresses who's been around. She was in Follow That Bird.
Whoa. Wow.
And Care Bears, the movie, too.
Ah.
She was in the Madballs cartoon. Like, oh, she's been around forever. But it was Claire Redfield from RE2 kind of on, and in almost every instance was until Revelations 2, which was a 2015 game that was actually pretty good. But for the first time, Claire Redfield was not played by Allison Court, which was like, for fans, was like, what?
The hell?
I'm betting she asked for more money. But I don't know that for a
fact.
Think
she went to court about it.
I'm just going to guess that an accomplished one. She's also, you might know her most, Jubilee in the X-Men cartoon.
Okay.
So she's had a ton of work and has been doing work consistently for 30 years.
Mm. That's it for TV. Kind of a light tweak. Well, especially at this point, 2006.
Yeah.
They're just, it's Christmas. Mm. Let's do nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Games.
What do we have a show that we've got like 40 episodes of? All right, it's a marathon now.
Breaking Bonaducci Marathon, we got it coming. But games this week, similarly, nothing much. Two XBLA games, which is Xbox Live Arcade, a digital service, Novadrome, which is a vehicle combat game that didn't review well, never played it, and New Rally X, an arcade game from, you know, the 70s, 80s. I can't remember the exact date for New Rally X, but an old classic game you see pop up on numerous...
You poop out dust clouds.
Yeah. And our classic arcade game came out the XBLA, but that's the show. That's the last full episode of 2016, which looks back at 86, 96, and 06. So that's... we've talked about numerous games, movies, TV, all kinds of crap.
We're going to bridge the gap next week between the sixes and the sevens.
How about that? But again, you can support us on patreon.com/lasertime where patrons will get a special episode of the show that looks back at everything that performed great over the year or didn't.
Yeah, a wrap-up episode to see some of our favorite stuff and how things were recognized. It will be surprising. Don't look ahead. Don't read ahead.
Patreon.com/lasertime. It's the home of bonus time, our weekly roundup, which will have the worst of 2016
soon. We have our favorite stuff of 2016, and this is a companion piece, the worst stuff of 2016. Warning, a little bit of political talk.
And also, we did commentary for a bunch of Christmas specials and two Christmas movies, Die Hard and Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, starring our future president.
Video commentaries on Patreon, exclusive to Patreon, Bells of Fraggle Rock, one of my favorites, and one of my least favorites, Sonic's Christmas Blast. LasertimePodcast.com is your key to all of our shows. Check that out.
I also want to give a shout out to Brendolph, one of our listeners, who literally during this episode, while we were recording this, I replied me on Twitter and asked if we're recording the Christmas episode, which we are right now, to bring up a Christmassy Ted, which was episode of Father Ted, aired December 24th, 1996, and I have to just mention the synopsis for this episode.
Please.
Ted, Dougal, and six other priests get hopelessly lost in a lingerie department during a Christmas shopping trip.
I remember this one.
I am going to watch this during the holidays. I gotta watch it now.
It's really good.
I always confuse Father Ted with Super Ted. I'm ridiculous.
Father Ted is so good.
Yeah.
Super Ted, not so much. Diana, got anything to plug?
Let's see. If you're into video games, which I am not, then there's Video Game Apocalypse. It's a whole show just for you, hosted by Mr. Goodman. And
we're talking Games of the Year, I believe.
Yeah, it's time for Games of the Year. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. And I'm also on Twitter now at Listen a Nerd, and I've been asked to spell that. LECINENERD. Le Cine, like
nerd.
Cinema.
Cine.
Nerd.
Nerd.
So the final birthday segment. Again, there's a couple. There's literally 2 days of December left in the next episode, but for the most part, this is birthdays.
Oh, birthday!
All wrapped up. December 23rd to the 29th, Eddie Vedder, Harry Shearer, Ricky Martin, Ryan Seacrest, Ava Gardner, Diedrich Bader, Rusev's birthday, a wrestler who is like super Bulgaria Russian, constantly you awful Americans. Birthday is on Christmas Day.
Hey, they might have Christmas in Bulgaria. I don't know.
Well, Bulgaria, it's just like he's always like anti-American, this, that, whatever. And it's like
Orthodox Christmas.
Yeah. plus Annie Lennox, Jimmy Buffett, Armin van Buuren, Dido, and Rod Serling, also all Christmas birthdays.
Wow.
But also in the same week period, Jared Leto, Lars Ulrich, Ozzie Smith, Charles Babbage, John Walsh, Goldberg, Cesaro, and China all share the birthday on the 27th. John Amos, Masioka from Heroes, John Legend, Stan Lee will be 94, Denzel Washington, Maggie Smith, Seth Meyers, Allison Brie, Jude Law, Mary Tyler Moore, and Ted Danson.
Wow.
Becker himself. now let's scoot the song back a tad and do the quiz. Born in 1949, at least that I know of, 4 Oscar nominations. She won Best Actress in 1980, and for that same movie also received a Grammy nomination. She was in a movie we talked about just a few episodes ago. Give it away. And she is in a Netflix series, Bloodline, in 2015.
Sissy Spacek.
I can't believe that's the one.
Oh, Coal Miner's Daughter.
I saw Bloodline.
Coal Miner's Daughter, yes.
Coal Miner's Daughter's so good.
I had to watch Bloodlines for Florida porn because I don't ever get to get back to there during the summer when I go to the beach.
But taking us out of this last episode, a KMFDM song, once they re-released it in 87, 88, Wax Trax, they added a song called Kickin' Ass that I really enjoy, but it still sounds very, very early KMFDM, but it's starting to get closer to what you like. And for what it's worth, where the name comes from, KMFDM, there's an actual quote here. It's not Kill Motherfucking Depeche Mode, as some people thought, or we used to make the joke.
A bad reason to start a band, to fight another one.
I know. So that, but that's not what it is. But here's a quote. On the morning of February 29th, 1984, this is Sasha Kaye, the main, if there's a main specific person behind it, Sasha Kaye. Captain Kaye, sometimes called in the songs. 29th, 1984, I woke up and went down to breakfast in a hotel in Paris. We had a show that opening night for an exhibition for European artists. We needed a motto for the night so that we could make flyers and post them around. There was a German newspaper on the table, and I started cutting out words, and I threw them all into a cap. We picked a few of them out, and it read, I'll not pronounce this correctly, despite having heard this exact phrase yelled at me in numerous songs, Kein Mehrheit für die Mitleid. It's improper German language in regards to a translation, but in a mindset of the early morning, it made perfect sense. So when I was on my way back to Hamburg, I'd mentioned it to Raymond Watts, the other key member. But it roughly translates to no pity for the majority. Why don't you just call it KMFDM? And that's how it became KMFDM. A lot of their songs come from, again, no pity for the majority, meaning if you're in power,
Eat the rich
kind of thing. Yeah, like if you're in power, it's your duty to make sure that the system is not rigged. And this goes back to them in the 80s and blah, blah, blah. But we'll go out with the song Kickin' Ass, which was added to their What Do You Know Deutschland album that debuted 30 years ago. When we come back, the last episode of 2016 and somehow the first of 2017.
Double issue.
We will see you in a week next time. Kickin' Ass, I'm a man who's sick, but I